Welcome back to the Midday Show, and it is my great pleasure, as it always is, when I talk to someone who, A, I don't know, I get to meet them and I get to be introduced to their music. It's a treat, one of the best parts of the job, and today it is no different. I have Joe Jenks, who is going to be performing as part of the Flying Cat music series at the Phoenicia Playhouse this Sunday, May 10th at 2 o'clock. And we have him here today. You just actually heard the song "Let Me Sing You a Song," which is Joe's. And remind me, is that your song or you wrote for Pete Seeger? And
Well, it's a pleasure to be here with you today, Adam. Thanks so much
thank
for
you.
having me. And yeah, that song, "Let Me Sing You a Song," is a piece that I wrote on the morning that Pete Seeger passed away. It was very much my pleasure, my privilege, my joy to be friends with Pete Seeger. And that doesn't make me special. Pete was friends with thousands of people over the course of his life. But it does make me happy. I met Pete when I was a very passionate and determined person in my late 20s. And Pete really, among other things, helped me reframe how I was relating to my music and to my art, to my engagement in the world. We were sitting along the banks of the Hudson River one day at a summer camp that we were both at. And he said to me, I never really understood why people called me a protest singer. And I was like, what? And he said, if you look at the music that I wrote, the songs of other people that I chose to record, the people I invited to share a stage with me or to participate in my recording process, he said, I spent most of my life singing about what I was for, not what I'm against. And he just let that hang in the air for a minute, and then he reached over and put a very firm but gentle hand on my shoulder. And he said, I think you will find that this journey is easier if you put most of your attention on what you're for rather than what you're against. And it was, I think, more transformative for me the farther I got from that conversation and the more years of my life I spent on the road and the more diverse communities I had the privilege of entering and singing songs for. And I realized that if I spent my time singing about what I was for, that I could sing some pretty bold ideas for people who were maybe not entirely on board with their understanding of it, but they would respond to the music because what I was inviting them into was a very human experience rather than a political one. And when I can use music to invite people to get connected to their own heart, to their own, places of joy and places of sadness or woundedness, it creates space for dialogue to begin and to actually happen. And it's a marvelous form of activism unto itself. And I really trace the choice to put my energy in those places, particularly in the last 20 years, to that conversation with Pete.
That was very lovely, a way of describing your journey as a musician, and as a storyteller, right?
Yeah, it's no less, I would say, progressive. I mean, I'm not apologetic about, a very transformative view of the world, but I think I got to know Pete when he was in his late 70s moving forward, and he had had a lot of time to think about the things that he'd done well in his career and in his life, and the things that he kind of wished he'd done a little better. And he was always eager to take a younger artist under wing, for 5 minutes or 5 years. And help them think well about what they were doing. He was inherently, I think, dialed into a sense of pedagogy and whatever it was that he was
And
doing.
connectivity.
So anyway, this is a song that I wrote based on a different conversation he and I had about his time in 1955, almost 2 decades before I was born, when he was absolutely being grilled by a congressional hearing, a congressional committee about his choices. And I always loved reading his testimony from 1955 because you watch somebody really committed to nonviolent means of resistance and transformation stand up elegantly and eloquently to a room full of bullies. And it's just, it's if anybody, most people probably haven't read Pete's testimony from 1955, but I encourage people to go find it online and read that testimony, because it's not that long of a read, but it is absolutely worth the time. It's really
Wow.
interesting bit of U.S. history and a little bit of Pete Seeger history.
As a result of his not really obliging the committee, that he would lost the ability to work in a lot of places for a while. And that actually ended up one of the reasons why he was ended up playing at like some summer camps, he didn't stand down. He was one of the very few people who stood up to his with his principles and didn't bend.
Yeah, that's true. There were one of the interesting things about his particular form of, again, nonviolent resistance, but resistance nonetheless, was that he truly built a legal argument with counsel using the First Amendment as his defense rather than the Fifth Amendment. You know, he didn't refuse to testify on the grounds that he might incriminate himself. He maintained that he'd done nothing wrong for which he should be incriminated. And he just, you know, he chose that not just as a novel defense, but as a genuine legal defense. He upheld the First Amendment. And there were a lot of other people that did that as a result of him doing that at the time. I think there were only five people that chose the First Amendment as their legal defense, but it was significant, and the proceedings were paused, but he spent 7 years on the blacklist, at which point he spent a lot of his time performing in schools, in churches, in church basement coffee houses, you know, in public spaces that were, you know, and you know, summer camps and all kinds of stuff. And I kind of joke that the B side of Pete Seeger's career as a folk singer is, you know, a really great career for most of us now. I mean, that's where most of us play, are coffee houses and church basements and schools and summer camps and, you know, all kinds of stuff.
And because of that other commitment to nonviolence and that part of his, moral makeup is that we know he wasn't going to take an axe to that cable at Newport. We know
No.
that.
It was a great movie, but it didn't quite go
I
down
know.
that way. On the
We
other
know all
hand, the
about
thing
that.
that they really got right is that one look from Toshi could stop not only Pete, but nearly any other sentient human being in their place. That, you know, she was kind, she was generous, she was graceful in so many ways, but when she had a mind for a thing to happen, she could just look at you and you're like, "Yes, ma'am."
Well, he was a listener of this station and a fan, so it's part of the great history. But if we can just kind of diverge for a moment from it seems almost criminal to say this, but diverge from the topic of Pete Seeger. How dare I? Let me find out while we have still a couple of minutes left here what audiences might expect at a Joe Jank show at the Phoenicia Playhouse on Sunday afternoon.
Well, I'll just say I'm really excited to come back and work with Flying Cat. They produced several concerts for me before the pandemic over about a 10-year window. So I'm excited because this will be my first time at the Playhouse. But musically, my shows are very, very diverse. Yeah, I'm a conservatory-trained musician. I'm a dual U.S.-Irish citizen. I grew up, you know, with a lot of folk music and Irish folk music as part of my composition. My dad's part of his family are Quebecois, and so I grew up with some of the Quebecois fiddle tunes, the French Canadian fiddle tunes in my head, and have been a student of symphonic music and jazz and music theater and, you know, all kinds of things. So my own songwriting style, it all kind of sounds a little bit like me because it's me singing them. But I'm often, you know, I'm kind of going, well, here's a little Tom Paxton in the mix, and here's a little bit of, you know, Doc Watson in the mix, and here's a little bit of Rodgers and Hammerstein in the mix. And, you know, there's a lot of reference points, and including some of my own, you know, Gen X pop cultural reference points every once in a while. I'd be like, you just wrote an Indigo Girls song, you know.
Nothing wrong with that. We love them.
You know, so it's, yeah, it's all over the map, but there's, I think there's a through line in my concerts of really uplifting very human narratives and human experiences, and certainly maybe a little extra awareness on the stories of working people, you know. But it's the power of stories is that it shortens the distance between you and me. Mm-hmm. It helps the two of us see some element of commonality between us through the music. And that's the piece of it that I think I love the most.
Once again, connectivity keeps coming up. Joe Jenks, Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock. People can go to the Phoenicia Playhouse website, purchase tickets, get more details. And I'm giving you the opportunity to choose another one of your songs, and which we can play as we say goodbye today.
Absolutely. Well, first, just let me say what a joy it is to be with you, Adam, here on WKZE and on the Midday Show. And thanks to your listeners for tuning in and supporting good radio. I'll also note that if people want more information, they can, of course, go to my website to look up more details about other tour dates. I'll be up at Cafe Lena on May 9th. And I get out to the sort of broader Hudson Valley, you know, from Albany down to the city, usually several times a year. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's good. I'll be back in the region, including at Old Songs this year and also at the Falcon Ridge Festival. But why don't we go out with a song that I wrote called Everybody Sings the Blues.
Here it is. This is Everybody Sings the Blues. You're listening to 98.1 KZE.